All right, welcome to the Retro Game Club Podcast, Season 3, Episode, 23-ish, which would be Episode 95. We don't know when we're releasing this one, so we're doing our best here. But with me, as always, someone else that requires a Microsoft login to log into.
Yes. Yeah, I haven't read much about Windows 11. Is that a new thing? You have to have a Microsoft account now to use it?
So far, I think that same thing was in like Windows 10 too, and they removed it. They keep trying to do it. So, yeah, okay. I will never use an operating system that requires an online account.
Well, but you have an Android phone, right?
Yeah.
Well, that requires an online account.
Oh, true. I guess that's right.
I mean, if you want to use the store, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if you don't care about app. Well, I think, can you use an Android phone, a non-rooted Android phone at all without a Google account? I don't think so.
I don't think so, but I consider that different because whenever I'm on, the whole point of a phone is to be connected. Computers, mm-hmm. You know, I could just not be. I could use it as word processing or whatever.
Yeah.
But what's going on other than Windows 11?
What is going on? I guess in the past week, depending on whenever people are listening to this or reposted or who knows, there were a bunch of localization announcements for Falcom games. Four games never released in the U.S. Three of them are remakes of games that like came out 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So three of them are actually remakes of PSP games, to give you an idea how long they have not been out in America.
Yeah.
And the other one is like their newest game. So they're all coming out in 2022 and 2023, though, because they still have to go through and, you know, it's an interesting situation where the translation, the base English translation, is already done for two of the games because a fan group did a translation and they, I guess, licensed the translation from the fan group.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, well, licensed, maybe threatened to sue. I don't know what the story is.
As long as they got paid.
The fan group seemed to be very happy that their scripts were being used, so they definitely didn't get sued. But you still have to go through and, like, go through whatever, you know, ESRB and rating cert, you know, all the things you have to certify your game to run. And these are, like, 100-hour RPGs, so it's not like you can test them in a week.
Anything I would like in there?
Yeah. No. One of them, I mean, three of them are turn-based Japanese RPG games. Mm. The other one, was it Legend of Naiotu? I can't pronounce it correctly. They kept the name largely Japanese. That plays a little bit like, it plays a little bit like an East game. It's more of an action RPG.
Okay.
So it was built on like the same engine as East Origin, I want to say.
Great game.
Yeah. So it's very, it's not nearly as fast paced from what I understand. But it's more of an action RPG than like turn-based RPG.
Yeah, cool.
So that might be all right if you're not into turn-based RPGs. But since I have like now anywhere from like at least 18 months, let's say a minimum 12 months before a game's coming out that I am like really fired up about, I got a spreadsheet, and like a giant nerd, I made a spreadsheet of my video game backlog. Yeah, and then kind of sorted it. And the game that came up to the top was some of the games that are high on my backlog list are just going to absolutely shock people.
What did you sort by? I'm sorry.
Well, I sort of sorted by how much I thought I wanted to play them. So it's an arbitrary sorting.
Okay.
I was thinking of doing it by age and just going through like the oldest games first.
Mm-hmm.
Like during quarantine, I literally played the oldest game on my backlog. And that was J.B. Herald Murder Club.
Yeah.
TurboGrafx 16 CD.
Yeah.
The longest, definitely the oldest game on my backlog. So I could have done it that way. I actually picked a game that is 20 years old, though. So this is one of the oldest games in my backlog. Grand Theft Auto 3.
Interesting.
I think people may be surprised that I've never played it because I have played most of the other games in the series.
Yeah.
Nope, never played 3. I did not have a place. You know, it came out in, what, 2001? And at that point, I was all in on Nintendo. Well, I still was catching up on Nintendo 64 stuff. And then I was GameCube. I didn't buy a PlayStation 2 until 2008, maybe.
Wow, when the PS3 was available.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I bought it like when they had the slim model
PlayStation 2. Yeah, those are nice. Yeah.
Yeah, and I started with Vice City was the first game I played in that series. I would say I was really surprised how good Grand Theft Auto 3 still plays today. Certainly, like, the combat, like, if you're trying to throw a grenade or aim a gun or something, like, it's bad. But the driving is really good. I mean, the driving is solid. Overall, I think it holds up really, really well for, you know, a 20-year-old PS2 game. The only thing I really haven't liked are the radio stations. I don't think any of them are really that good. So I've been listening to podcasts. That's my radio. Old school, like, AM radio.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, I hold a GTA 3 up there with Mario 64, where, like, Mario 64 got us into 3D the right way. But yeah. GTA 3 took it a step further where we were 3D, where we could do whatever we want, and it's still a game, you know?
Yeah, like, it came out a year after Shenmue, and Shenmue definitely looks better. But GTA 3 plays, it's not even in the same league.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
They don't feel like games of the same generation in terms of how they play. So that's been fun. I mean, I'm getting kind of far in it. I've been playing, probably staying up a little too late, you know, just working through missions and stuff. And at some point, I'll post my backlog list. I got to write some kind of script or something to convert spreadsheet to like a Bootstrap table. Like, sounds like a fun project.
There's got to be a CSV to HTML. There's probably a save. I think there's a HTML save as in Excel or Google Sheets.
Yeah, there isn't Google Sheets, but it has a bunch of like formatting and stuff in there. So I would essentially be writing something to rip it out and either convert it to like an HTML table or Bootstrap Grid. But I think Bootstrap Grid, you're limited to 3 columns, maybe. All right, this is not the Bootstrap podcast.
Yes.
and then depending when we release this, there's a little plug here. My wife has a book coming out July 6th. It is actually her fourth book. And it's not something most of our listeners would like, I don't think. I don't know. It's a romance book. It's a romantic comedy book. And it's called Too Good to Be Real by Melanie Johnson. It'll be out July 6th. You should buy a copy for all of your friends and family. It's definitely at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and it might be sold in Targets.
When you sent me the link, I saw Target was on your wife's site. I sent this to my wife, too.
Yeah. So,
making sure she gets a copy.
Yeah, buy a copy. Go ahead.
You
can order it for sure from Target online. Like, it's really weird. Like, I've learned a lot about the book distribution business and, like, what kind of books get put in what stores. Like, she said 3 other romance books out. And, like, it was sort of weird, like, which Walmart locations would get which book in the past. Like, they have something about, like, the book is, like, this genre or is this type of character, so we're going to send it to this type of, to this city. Like, I don't know the Walmart formula.
They know their demographics.
They do, yeah. And it was like her first book was, like, in the checkout aisle there.
Cool.
Yeah. So that was exciting. And, yeah, the street date is like July 6th, but I think Barnes & Noble might already have it in the stores.
I think
she had some reader send her a picture of it with a broken street date. Not that it's a big deal.
Nice.
Right. It's not like an Oprah book club book where if you break the street date, like Oprah kneecaps you. I happened to work at a bookstore when the first Oprah book club came out. And that was, we were basically told like, you will never get another Oprah Book Club book shipped to your store if you break the street date.
Nice. So my buddy has a signed whatever George W. Bush's book was. I forget if he was running for president for the first time or second time, but he released a book and looking back, it's hilarious, but it's also terrifying. He was the president. that he thought this was an okay idea. There, I guess there was an entire chapter about drug use, heavy, heavy, bad drug use.
Okay.
And, you know, his team at the last minute said, no, 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 we have to pull this and republish. And my buddy worked at a Borders Outlet store at the time, and they were already stocking the books that night before the call came in and said, no, pull them. And he already bought a book.
Oh, boy.
And so he got a copy. And at some point, George W. was doing some kind of book signing tour. And he bought a book from Target or Meijer or wherever it was of like the legit book, put the cover on it, you know, the wrap cover, whatever the thing is called, and got him to sign that original unreleased book. He had no idea. So he has a nice...
That is worth some money, man.
Yeah, he has a nice artifact there.
That is a good one, yeah. Now, I worked at a video game store when we had a copy of, I think it was Die Hard Game Fan, pulled because someone wrote a really racist game review.
Wow.
And they... We got just a, there weren't emails at the time. Like your store announcements came through, like they came through on the cash register, like in the morning on a cash register receipt would be like a list of the store announcements. I can't make this stuff up. And essentially like, you have to pull that magazine, don't sell to anyone. And we're like, I don't know what's up with that. And, look through it, found the, you know, the review and you're like, oh yeah, definitely can't print that.
Like, how does that get through an editor?
Even in the '90s, you can't print that.
Yeah.
And then I talked to some of the guys from, you know, like, was it Sushi X? Like some of the guys from EGM about it at Midwest Gaming Classic, because they distinctly remembered that event.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So what about you? What have you been up to?
Oh, geez. Oh, let's see. Oh, I did a kind of, my birthday's coming up, and I kind of did a birthday present to myself. It was kind of an impulse sitting on a couch by... of a 1UP arcade, the sit-down Outrun cabinet was re-released. It's kind of a limited run cabinet. You know, they did the same thing with Star Wars sit-down. So, and like I said last episode, like, I don't like the multiplayer 1UP arcades. They're kind of too short, you know, even for single player. But the sit-down ones are pretty cool because you can move the seat back and forth and whatever. So yeah, that'll be coming in the mail. I should probably warn my wife about that one.
Oh, yeah, that's not a package you can just hide.
Yeah, it's a big one. Yeah, speaking of backlog games, yeah, Spyro was one of my older backlogs, so that's why I picked that game this week. And right before we started recording this episode, I ordered Dickie's Barbecue. Do you have that in Chicago?
Yes, we do. I've driven by one before. I don't like barbecue stuff very much.
Okay. Well, this one, if you like barbecue, they're actually, for like a fast food type place, they actually do a great job. Anyway, we're not sponsored by them. I would...
Because I just said how much I dislike barbecue.
And, yeah, and I would also die of a heart attack in 3 years if I was sponsored by a barbecue or pretty much any food company. Anyway, so... On their app, apparently it just links to DoorDash for delivery, which I guess is pretty common. And so, you know, it says it was supposed to be here at a certain time. And I'm looking at, you know, the GPS on the DoorDash, and the guy's car is not moving. And he's parked across the street, kind of kitty corner from where I know this restaurant is. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on there. So I kind of give it 10 minutes and... You know, they're already 20 minutes late. I'm like, I'll call, you know, use DoorDash and stuff like that because you don't want to talk to people on the phone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm like, I'll call him if I have to. Anyway, soon enough, he shoots me a text. I just got in a car accident.
The barbecue okay? Is what you
said? Yeah. So this is kind of a question to the listeners is like, so I have two young kids here who are starving. We're both starving. And this poor guy gets in a car accident, and you know, if you're doing DoorDash, like, you know, whether it's your first job or your side gig, you're doing it for the money, and then like your car gets wrecked. You know, I don't know how wrecked it got, but it's such a sad...
By the way, if you didn't tell your insurance company that you were using that car for DoorDash, you're paying for that out of pocket.
Oh yeah, they better not say that. Yeah, but so So what do I say to him? You know, so like me and my wife are sitting there. I'm like, what do I do? Because no matter what I say, I'm a jerk. So, you know, like, well, I respond. Obviously, I hope you and anyone else is okay. Yada, yada, yada. And he said, you know, hey, I'll keep you updated. And half an hour, 45 minutes goes by. My kids are screaming. My wife's getting hangry. And so finally we just call the restaurant. And we're like, dude, we don't know what to do. And they're like, we don't know what to do either, but we have the corporate number. So we'll call. And so they cancel the order. They refund the order. And they're like, just go back on. I'm like, my wife will come pick it up. And they're like, cool, just use the app again. And we'll see you in a little bit. You're refunded. You're all good. So my wife, I do that. And I triple check that I put pickup order. My wife leaves. It starts torrential downpouring the second she leaves, which is not great. And she gets there, and there's another DoorDash guy there taking our food. And my wife is just like, give that to me now. And he's like, whoa, what is going on? And yeah, apparently there's a... I looked at the receipt afterwards, and it said for pickup. So I don't know what was going on, but... Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we've been doing this pickup thing for a year now, and some restaurants are still really bad at it.
Yeah.
That's what I've come to learn. There are some that really, I mean, I could tell you which ones really have their act together because there's some places we've ordered out from a few times, but yeah, there's at least one place I order from that's like a local place, and they have all these signs up about like order to go, support local business, and they are still terrible at it. Like, you're guaranteed to get the wrong thing every single time.
Well, Dickie's was great. When we called on, they were so nice and helpful. It was kind of DoorDash that we're not...
Yeah.
But I feel in the very unlikely scenario that this person is listening to this podcast. I'm so sorry. I hope everything works out. But it was just like, what can I do? You know what I mean? Yeah, it was just a very strange situation to be in. Hopefully he at least got some free barbecue out of it. I guess we should dive into some news because we also have a topic this week for some reason. But we start out on a very sad and somber note. I kind of want to get through it quickly. But the creator of Beast Nest Emulator, which is also called Hygen, died today.
It was about a day ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was hesitant to talk about this because you do kind of have to put a bit of a trigger warning around it because...
Yeah.
You know, it was unfortunately self-inflicted, and it was, you know, due to many years of bullying and harassment from a message board, not 8chan, which I was kind of surprised, but from a board I'd never heard of. I'm not going to say the name.
Yeah.
That apparently targeted the guy for whatever reason.
Yeah, which there's never any good reason.
Right. The reason doesn't matter. That's why I'm not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's horrible. Absolutely horrible. And it's just, you know, I guess all I can say is like, if you know anyone who is on the receiving end of like an organized harassment campaign, you know, there's hotlines you can call. The article we link to has links to the hotlines.
Yeah.
It's just a horrible situation.
Yeah. I mean, he was a genius and a great person. So big loss for the community. And, yeah, I just kind of wanted to move through that one quickly just because, yeah, it's pretty heavy and I felt like we had to touch on it. We talk about his emulator all the time. It's probably the best emulator out there. It really is.
Yeah, yeah, it's the core for pretty much every Super Nintendo emulator you use now.
Yeah, yeah. So just tragic and insane and, yeah, shocking. But, yeah, we wish his family and friends the best. And, yeah, and it's just kind of so strange because our next article was about an update for Super Mario World that you can now officially play it widescreen with the Beast Nest emulator.
Yeah, yeah, probably the only emulator that can do it right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously like a not compatible on original hardware idea. But we hinted about this episode or two ago that there are projects where you can make some games widescreen because the tiles are actually loaded, just not on screen. Now, some games it doesn't work. Like some games it just wouldn't work because the tiles aren't actually loaded like that. But Mario, of course, is one where it does work because you can scroll left and right. Like some games, if it's a one-directional scrolling game, it might be harder to do because it might just chunk the tiles to the left of the screen.
But this adds a little bit more where it's an actual patch to the ROM, I think. I could be wrong.
Yeah, you have to do it as a patch or something that's harder for Nintendo to take down. I mean, they still will probably end up taking it down. That's like, I kind of cut back sometimes on like, oh, projects Nintendo is going to take down soon. I don't know. Like a straight up patch is a little bit harder, but it still could happen.
Speaking of which, you texted me this week that one of our articles from last week got taken down where we were surprised it wasn't earlier.
Yeah, well, because they didn't know about it. It wasn't until like gaming sites started talking about it. It was the GoldenEye recreated in Far Cry.
Oh, that's right. Story. Yeah. Yeah.
Which nobody knew about until it made the rounds on the internet.
Yep. And then Nintendo took it down.
No, it was whoever owns the rights to GoldenEye.
Oh, okay.
So I guess it's Amazon now, right?
Oh, because they bought MGM. That's right.
Yeah, it's probably Amazon. Man, let's blame Jeff Bezos, man. Yeah. I like that petition to deny him re-entry to Earth.
It's so funny. I love it. What do we got next?
There is a Atari Jaguar FMV game that was not released and is getting some sort of an update and will be sold. Like, you can buy it from somewhere. Where did it say you can buy it? It didn't say limited run games.
Can you just download it, or is it actually for sale?
No, they're going to sound to me like they're planning to sell it. Why would you put all the work into it, right?
True, yeah.
It uses, you know, it's a pretty standard-looking FMV game called American Hero. Looks all right.
It's supposed to be over-the-top 80s action film in, like, a 90s era.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm positive they're going to ask money for it.
Otherwise,
why go through all that work, man?
Especially since it says coming to PC and consoles. You're right. But yeah, this looks pretty funny. I can't wait to see this.
Let's see. The Ultra Rare Air Raid. This is a Atari 2600 game that at one point people did not believe actually existed until a copy turned up. Or was it a boxed copy? I think people didn't believe the box existed. But anyhow, someone donated one to a Goodwill in Dallas, and a Goodwill worker there recognized it as being an incredibly rare game.
Yeah, wow. So how much? Over 10 grand?
10 grand, yeah.
Wow.
Much rather Goodwill gets it than someone else. Why not?
Yeah. And I don't know anything about this game. So this is like a baby blue cartridge with mm-hmm. a T-molding handle shape at the top of it.
Yeah. Everything about it seemed fake. It's by a company called Menavision that no one can ever prove existed.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Very strange. Another strange story. Arcade Gaming Museum opening in Japan for only a limited time. And really just, I think, a few days or a month. So it's a hands-on museum in Japan. There's pictures on this site on Kotaku. And it looks pretty interesting. There's a lot of strange games in this photo. Just in case I don't have a good way to edit this episode, I just want to say we both had internet issues there, and we don't know where we left off. So we're moving on to our next story, which is one I almost cut. Because it seems like future news, but I didn't cut it because another site kind of said this is going to happen. Castlevania games from Game Boy Advance are going to be in a collection on modern systems soon, which is pretty cool.
Maybe.
Probably.
Was the other site just sourcing the Kotaku article?
No, it was sourcing a ratings company. So they submitted it to be rated for... you know, E for Everyone or whatever, all that stuff.
Okay.
So that's why I kind of left it on. Once it gets to that point, it's probably going to happen. But I've never played the Castlevania GBA games. Have you?
No, I... Okay, I didn't really know they existed.
Okay, there you go. There are going to be some new games for you in the future.
Yeah.
And this is your favorite story of the week.
It is, yeah. So I didn't know about this. So I guess if you need to buy original Atari hardware, like Atari parts, there's one seller. His name is Bradley, and he has all of them. And this article is from Vice.com. It's called "Don't Piss Off Bradley, the Parts Seller Keeping Atari Machines Alive." And yeah, it's about someone who, when Atari stuff was being liquidated, bought out, I mean, literal pallets and warehouses of Atari parts, and then runs a small business, one-person shop, selling Atari parts directly to people. Mm-hmm. But it's a lot like ordering from the Soup Nazi on Seinfeld. Like, there's a very specific way you have to order from him, and if you deviate from it at all, he bans you from buying products. And it sounds like he holds grudges for a very, very long time. And when I was thinking about it, it occurred to me that everything I read about this guy, it's basically how it would have turned out if I was in his situation, right? Like, he bought all these parts before the Atari Age forums existed.
Okay.
Right? So a few people bought stuff from him once in a while. Maybe enough that it was a 40-hour-a-week job.
Uh-huh.
But then you have the internet and you have stuff like Atari Age, where now more and more people are getting into Atari, and now he's getting flooded with tons of new customers. And he doesn't want to hire people because it's, you know, it's an Atari business, right? Atari parts business, come on. And instead he's dealing with all these people that he's never interacted with before that don't know how he likes to work, right? He still works like it's the 1980s. I mean, it's all mail order forms and whatnot. So he will very happily ban you from purchasing Atari parts.
Yeah, there's some funny quotes in here where it's like people saying like, yeah, I'll put in my order and not hear back for like 4 days. And, you know, you don't know if he got it correctly or what's going on. And you're afraid to give him a call because he just might ban you depending on his mood. You know, sometimes it's just a 6-month ban. Sometimes it's, you know, forever. And then you got no place else to go.
And then the article speculates a little bit on what will happen when he dies.
I didn't read that part. Can you give us in the nutshell?
No, it's just speculating. Like, they don't know, like, when he's either too old or not interested in running the business or not around. Like, it's not real clear what will happen to these warehouses of parts that he has.
Yeah.
I don't know if he has kids or whatever, but you can't really expect your kids to carry on your Atari parts business.
No. They will hopefully they don't get thrown out. Hopefully they get auctioned or something. But yeah. It's a funny article.
GameCube controller mod. GameCube keyboard controller mod, I should say.
Yeah, so apparently there was a keyboard controller for GameCube for Phantasy Star Online, and I guess it wasn't very good. I guess it was mushy buttons and stuff like that, and this is, you know, gets new nice keycaps for it, and it's a complete mod, and it makes mm-hmm. into a pretty nice keyboard. I mean, in a GameCube controller.
Yes, yeah. I think I still have a Dreamcast keyboard somewhere in here.
Those are cool. You could install Linux on your Dreamcast with that.
Yeah, it's just a regular keyboard, really. This has a controller on it also. This has a GameCube controller built into the keyboard.
Well, I guess Phantasy Star Online was on Dreamcast also, right?
It was, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Another strange one. This is barely retro, but Killer Instinct soundtrack used a human bone instrument. So, in the 2013 reboot of Killer Instinct, I guess the composer got this, like, ancient Tibetan bone instrument, and I guess there's a guy in Killer Instinct, I don't see his name right now, Spinal, and I guess he used it for his soundtrack or something, but, like, this article is kind of in two parts. It's kind of like, yeah, it's cool and creepy and stuff, but also, like, did you have to use a ancient Tibetan relic like that? It might might be kind of offensive in some way, which is probably true.
Yeah, and like there's not a sample of it you could use?
I guess not. But yeah, very good question. And then the last two articles we really don't need to go into. They're kind of the same article. One is just that the Nintendo 64 is 25 years old this week. And I should mention that we're recording this episode pretty early, meaning we probably won't release it for about 2 to 3 weeks. So some of this news may be dated, including the Nintendo 64 being 25 years old. And then the next article is just Super Mario Brothers 64 is 25, and it just examines, you know, how it really changed the industry, and it really got 3D right for the first time. And that brings us to our topic, which is the Nintendo 64 is 25 years old.
Yeah, and we have some completely random, unsorted Nintendo 64 memories.
Oh, we have barely planned this topic out at all.
Yes, this is just a list of Nintendo 64 and adjacent things that we thought of in the past 3 days.
So did you get one at launch?
No. I was in college and working full time. I had no time at all for video games when this thing came out. I was working, you know, at least 40, if not 50 or 60 hours a week and going to college full time.
Oh, geez. Sounds a little tiring. Yeah.
But no, I also didn't have any money. That would be the other factor. So I got the Nintendo 64 after I finished college. So I started playing it in January 2000. And I mostly played Donkey Kong 64 and Zelda 64.
Yeah, it's pretty much what they're used for.
And I think you got one at launch?
Yeah, so I graduated in 1996 from high school. And so I was still at home. I was working full time, so I had a little bit extra money. And I got the pre-order. Actually, me and my buddy got the pre-order at the same time. And so it was released on September 29th, 1996. And of course, we're saying it's 25 years old, but that's, you know, when it was released in Japan. And so I have the distinct memory of doing the pre-order at Toys R Us, and they give you the little card or certificate with the receipt and whatnot. And my buddy and I forget whose idea it was. We thought it would be cool to, use a eraser and a pen on the receipt, kind of change the date a few days so we could buy it ahead of time. And it worked, but I don't think for the reasons we thought. We thought we hacked the system and got the pre-order a few days in advance. You know, we were like, hey, it says this date on here. You got to give it to us. You know, and the clerk was like, oh, sure, whatever. But it worked. And we thought, I can't believe we got away with this. But it was years later that I was reading that all Toys R Us started selling it before they were supposed to. And then other retailers followed it a few days later. But yeah, pretty funny memory. I thought it was pretty cool for doing that. And of course, I only got the two games that were released for it at launch, Pilot Wings 64, which Dan Hess was on this podcast talking about, and Mario 64. But you have some funny links here for some Zelda commercials.
Yeah, the thing I remember most about the Nintendo 64 was the sort of early viral marketing campaign for Majora's Mask, which said nothing about the game. They created some like fake science websites and then like a fake online radio station. And they were both very, very weird. It was all very kind of X-Files-y, including, yes, RadioZelda.com. And then they ran ads basically about like, basically acting like in the real world, the moon was coming crashing into Earth. Now, of course, like if you look at Radio Zelda, this is like another kind of trigger warning thing. Like they literally have a picture of like the moon coming into the Twin Towers.
Jeez.
Well, this was 2000, right? So I can understand that would be upsetting to some people to see, but it's like, this was the kind of stuff they were marketing back then.
Wow. Yeah. I'm looking at our notes here. What else do you want to touch on next here?
Ocarina of Time tricking you into buying a Rumble pack. So when I first heard about Rumble, I said, that sounds like a bad idea. And then in Ocarina of Time, you find an object that triggers the Rumble pack whenever you're near a secret. Do you remember this?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So I went and bought a Rumble pack. And I ended up kind of eventually tuning out Rumble. But then, like, one day, the it was not until GameCube that I, like, completely shut off Rumble. So I've been playing games with Rumble for a long time. And then I bought a WaveBird controller for the GameCube. Do you have one of those?
Oh, those are fantastic. Yeah.
They're fantastic, but they don't have Rumble.
Yeah, the battery would run out so fast.
Right. So they do not have Rumble. And when I started playing games with the WaveBird controller, I'm like, hey, wait a minute. I like games better when the controller isn't shaking.
You know, I do have to say that latest Ratchet & Clank game I played, I think it's the first game ever to get Rumble right. It's so light and kind of, it's hard to explain. I'll just leave it at that. But mm-hmm. the early Rumble.
The first thing I do every time I start a game is disable Rumble. And by the way, I also have Rumble disabled in the like PlayStation configuration.
Yeah.
But I'm not taking any chances.
Now, is it a Mandela effect type thing, or did Star Fox come bundled with the Rumble Pack, Star Fox 64?
I believe it came with it.
Okay.
And it also came with a music CD.
I do not remember that.
Yeah.
Wow.
That I'm sure is not Mandela effect, but Star Fox 64 music CD. I think I have one somewhere in here. Oh yeah, I better find this. People are selling it on eBay for like way more than you would imagine.
That's great. Yeah, you gotta find your copy.
It's called Star Fox 64 the soundtrack CD.
I should go back and mention kind of the specs of the Nintendo 64. You know, it's pretty much an SGI system. It has a MIPS 4300 CPU at running almost 100 megahertz. 4 megs built in. You could get another 4 megabyte expansion pack. And yeah, it had 16-bit, you know, CD audio. It just didn't have a CD player. But if you put that specs up against like an Intel chip at the time, I mean, this was as fast, and it's in some ways faster than its Pentium counterparts that were released at the same time, which, gosh, it's 96, so that would have been like Pentium 166, I think, would have been released around then. So that's pretty impressive. And I know people make fun of its 3D draw rate is kind of shallow, you know, the fog effect. But I still thought the Nintendo 64 looked better than the PlayStation.
Yeah, I think on average, that's true.
But,
I mean, people always call out specific games, you know, that look better or worse. But I think on average, Nintendo 64 is the best looking system of its generation.
So speaking of which, what are your, you know, kind of favorite games and maybe least favorite games for it, or biggest disappointments for it?
Well, I mean, 99% of my Nintendo 64 time was Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, and I guess Donkey Kong 64. And that's what I mostly played. Like, I played Paper Mario on it. It was that was a little disappointing, but only because I played the GameCube Paper Mario before it.
Okay.
So it just doesn't, they're almost the exact same game.
Okay.
So that's what was disappointing. And then there's some surprises. I mean, on this list, I made a list of some games. Like, here's a really weird one. Like, Paperboy 64 is a much more fun game and well done than you would expect.
It really is. That'd be a great Game Club game.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I like how they used the analog controller to, like, be the, like, how you aim the papers and how much force you throw them with. So that was a good surprise. I put somewhere here on my notes about how I think the Nintendo 64 might be the best system ever for Star Wars games.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You got what? Shadow of the Empire. You have, what's that, Rebel?
Pod Racing. And you have the first Rebel Assault game.
Yeah, yeah. All fantastic.
There's probably some Star Wars. Yeah. There's probably some other like Star Wars Episode One stuff I'm not thinking of. But I mean, it came out right at that peak, you know, peak era for Star Wars Episode One.
And
right. So that would have been summer of 99.
Yeah.
Right, Star Wars Episode One came out.
Yeah. I think, I mean, I gotta be wrong, but yeah, Pod Racing might be the only Episode One game on it. I've gotta be wrong about that.
I think you are, because I think there's another game just called like Star Wars Episode One.
Oh, Battle for Naboo. Yeah.
Yeah, there's that, and let me see here. I have this weird catalog. I don't even know where I got it. It's a UK, it's from the UK. And it's summer 1999, and it's all Star Wars Episode One games. So you have Star Wars Episode One Racer. There was a game called Star Wars The Phantom Menace, but that is on PlayStation and PC, it looks like. And then, yeah, a bunch of other PC games. But yeah, Rogue Squadron and Pod Racer are the two that I'm really thinking as being standout games.
And in our notes here, you also have Mario Kart listed, which I think might be the best Nintendo 64 game. That I was so addicted to that game. And it, I think Mario Kart 64 should be credited more than, you know, the first Mario Kart game for kind of creating the kart genre. You know, there are so many copycats after that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's still like, whatever reason my kid and I were searching like on Amazon for the most garbage Switch games we could find. Just because we were, I don't know, we just thought it'd be funny. And yes, yeah, SpongeBob Racers shows up on there.
Nice. Because why not?
Yeah, it started because she'd heard about a game on the Switch where like you flip houses.
That sounds great.
It does not look great. It looks like a lot of like art that comes with a game engine. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's a stock art.
Yeah. Yeah.
I told her if it goes on sale for like $5, she's free to get it, but don't spend anything more than that. But that's actually what got us into the rabbit hole of just the garbage games on Amazon. And there is some, there's stuff. If I read you the title of some of these Switch games, you wouldn't believe it's a real game.
Did you guys ever get into the wrestling games on Nintendo 64? Because I think there were some good ones. There were a lot of shovelware ones, but
yeah, I should have talked about, I wrote a whole article about wrestling games of that era. I guess you could Google this. I wrote an article called Video Games of the Monday Night War. And it's about all the video, if you know pro wrestling,
yeah,
it's about all the video games that were released when WCW and WWF aired their main shows at the same time. It was a specific era of wrestling that lasted about 4 or 5 years.
Uh-huh.
And it went from 96 to 2001.
So literally this era.
Yeah, yeah, literally the lifespan of the Nintendo 64.
Yeah, there were a lot of wrestling games for it.
There were, and they're all kind of the same. There's one called No Mercy that actually stands out as being a really fun game.
Okay.
It's kind of, I mean, they're all sort of based off the same game engine, it seems.
Yeah, oh yeah. There's not enough memory in the Nintendo 64 for any real, I guess, realistic texture maps, so all their faces kind of look a little funny.
Let's see. According to my own article, what you have here is, I'm trying to get to the first one here. Okay, not in your house. WCW versus NWO World Tour, you have. Mm-hmm. WWF Warzone. WCW NWO Revenge. That one is also really good. That one is actually pretty playable. WCW Nitro, which is not quite that good. WWF Attitude, WCW Mayhem, which is the worst. WWF WrestleMania 2000. And was there? Did I miss No Mercy?
So is Mayhem the one?
Yeah, No Mercy is like the last one. Yeah.
I think Mayhem's the one that had a coding bug in it where it would randomly delete your save card.
Mm-hmm.
Just randomly. No,
yeah, I think Mayhem had the one cool thing is it had passcodes where you could recreate actual pay-per-views with a password. Like when they ran a pay-per-view, they would also give you a password for the game. Huh. But because of like wrestlers changing promotions and all the turnover, that it really didn't work out very well. And then the very last game of the Monday Night War, WCW Backstage Assault, which is like not really a wrestling game. It's like wrestlers fighting with, you know, chairs and stuff backstage.
That's strange. Huh.
It's I compared it to Battle Arena to Shinden. That's what it feels like.
Okay.
Oh, no, I said it's like playing Battle Arena to Shinden on Special K. That's how I described that game.
And then you also had a list here of, well, kind of a subtopic here of mm-hmm. games that finally made the jump to 3D that it really didn't work out for.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Bomberman. I bought Bomberman Hero, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
I was really jazzed about that, and it is not good.
Did you? I love Bomberman games, and I agree with you. Did you play the one that's on the Switch? I think it's Bomberman R.
No, I'm nervous to try it.
It's not great. It's not bad, but it's like we've come so far. You know, I felt like it could have been more. You know.
Okay.
I'm Bomberman 94 for life. But what other games do you have in there that have made terrible jumps to 3D?
I wrote Shadowgate, which is technically a backlog game for me because I haven't played it, but I've seen nothing but like 0-star reviews for Shadowgate 64.
Yes.
Castlevania. Have you played Castlevania on Nintendo 64?
Yeah, it's one that I luckily rented before mm-hmm. wasting my money on that. I heard the one, there's two, and I heard the one after it isn't bad, but I have not played it.
Okay. Did you add Mega Man?
There is a Mega Man 64, isn't there?
I mean, it comes up on the Google.
Let's see.
Did Angry Video Game... Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Angry Video Game Nerd do this one? Or am I thinking of a different Mega Man game?
I don't know. I just remember it this being bad, but I haven't... Oh, I'm looking at this and it looks bad right now.
It looks pretty bad.
So, also known as Mega Man Legends, I think. Reception. Yeah. Not great scores. Metacritic has it at a 59. Not
all right.
Great.
That's about where the home flipping game was.
That's about where the what was?
The home flipping game.
Oh, yeah. So, it's kind of in that. Yeah. Great. Yeah,
I think that was 57.
Nice. The Superman game too. Not.
Yeah, I didn't really count that because Superman, I don't think of as being a game franchise.
True, yeah.
Because it's different developers every time, right?
Yeah. But, any closing memories of the Nintendo 64?
No, I mean, like lately I've been replaying the Cruisin' games because I didn't get to play them too much. Those are excellent. You know, I think the last time I saw Nintendo 64, like in a store, I was at a GameStop. This is one that was near my office. And they had a bin of like 25-cent Nintendo 64 games, like buy one, get three free. It was like some insane promotion like that.
Wow.
But this is not a joke. All they had in there was the Xena game, which I guess must not be good.
Wow.
So if you wanted like four copies of Xena for Nintendo 64, it's just absolutely absurd promotion like that. And I don't know if that game's any good. It must not be.
Now I'm really intrigued. Yeah, you know, every time I see one in the store, anytime I see one of a different a different see-through color, a different transparent color. I want to buy it, but I always stop short of it because why? You know, I already have two Nintendo 64s. These things aren't easy to emulate. You know, I do think that Nintendo should do one of two things. Either release a Nintendo 64 Mini Classic or just start releasing these games on the Switch. A lot of them.
Yeah. So Xena 64 appears to be a one-on-one fighting game, which is not what I expected.
No, that's not what I would think either.
It's an IP you could do something good with.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it still has its fans.
Yeah, my last note here, I just forgot about this. I have a link to a news article from March 9th, 2000, where Nintendo settled a class action suit with the state of New York by giving people Mario Party gloves.
Because they were injuring their fingers or something?
They were injuring the palm of their hands. So there was some game where you have to spin the analog stick, and I guess people were putting their palm on top of the analog stick and spinning it that way.
I could see how that could be faster than your thumb, yeah. I could also see how that could wear the skin right out there.
Yeah, so that's what happened.
That kind of seems like that's on the person, though. You know,
yeah, kind of does, yeah.
Like if something makes you bleed, you might want to stop.
So they spent this, I don't know how many pairs of gloves this is, man, $80 million on gloves. Well, they said they're committing $80 million for the gloves. So what it probably means, if it's a class action suit, right, you would have to file something, right, and say, Nintendo, please send me gloves.
Yeah.
So this probably means Nintendo agreed to send out up to $80 million worth of gloves.
Yeah, they probably set that money aside in a separate account, and then after it expires, then they get that money back.
Yeah. Yeah, crazy. Absolutely nuts.
Yeah. I guess, so that's the Nintendo 64. It's old enough to get a discount on a... It can rent a car now, I guess, right? I guess it can. I guess that's 25 years old, yeah. Game Club. I guess we got some Game Club games. That's why we're here, yeah. Right? So I did Spyro the Dragon, a PlayStation 1 classic. This is Insomniac Games, who did Ratchet & Clank and the new Spider-Man game and many other great games. This is their second game. It was reviewed really well. It sold really well. It was their way to kind of get the younger crowd into the PlayStation. And so it's a 3D platformer. Zach called it a collectathon. You play a purple little, I guess, like teenage dragon that has to save all the other dragons. So I guess what the story is that these dragons called the bad guy ugly, and so he trapped them all in rock or stone or something. And if you touch these dragons, you can save them all and then defeat this bad guy in the end. You don't have to save all the dragons. You could really just do one per level or world or whatever they call it, then go right to the end. You know, you could beat this game in 11 minutes if you want. That's what the speed run is. Or, you know, if you play the whole thing, it's about, I think, 6 to 8 hours. I got about 3.5-4 hours into it. And I liked it. And I like it because it's simple. It plays really well. It really does remind me of a Ratchet & Clank game, you know, maybe a Daxter & Jack type game. But you only have two attacks. You have jump, you have blow fire, and you have rush, where you could like run into people with your horns. And that's about it. And, you know, there's a few other mechanics, like you could get, you know, you could use a cannon to shoot and kind of solve little puzzles that way. Other than that, it's a pretty shallow game in terms of story and gameplay-wise, but I had fun playing it. I don't know if I'm going to go back and play the other games. I hear there's a lot of quality of life updates in the second and third game, which you, I played on the Switch. There's a remastered version all in Unreal Engine that you could get pretty cheap now on Switch. So I do recommend that. I did have fun playing it. What else did I mention? Yeah, this is a 98 game. And Stuart Copeland from The Police composed the soundtrack for this. I think that's the most shocking thing about this game. So you weren't able to play this one, right?
No, it turns out I don't have any copies of it. So I watched a speed run. The best speed run is like an hour and 20 minutes. And that's more than I have when I usually have lunch. So I kind of fast forwarded, you know, to cut to the chase. It looks like a pretty fun game. I mean, I thought it looked pretty impressive.
Yeah. You did the everything speed run. If you did the any percent speed run, it's 11 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know,
I just went to speedrun.com and whatever was first on their page.
Yeah. But if you watched even, you know, 20 minutes of this game, like, you definitely got a vast majority of it.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't tell you what the game was about other than, like, you're collecting things. Like you said, it's a collect-a-thon. Like, you've clearly got to go to each level and collect a lot of different things.
One thing I kind of felt bad about is that, you know, there's, I don't know what the name of them is, the bad guys in this, they kind of look like the end guy. They look like green trolls, kind of, or Bergens, if you've seen the Trolls movies. But when they see you, they cower and they run. And I felt bad taking these people out because they were just terrified of me. Like, I felt like Spyro was kind of the bad guy. And also the bad guy, he was upset because they were making fun of him. So I kind of side with him. I'd kind of like to, they should rewrite this thing and kind of flip it around. But that's my hot take on that. So what did you play this week?
So I played Bad Dudes. I have it here on a Data East collection for the Wii, of all things. Mm-hmm. I think this might actually be a rare collection. I have to look it up again. Like, I got it on, it was literally like I went to Toys R Us. It was $19.99. I'm like, oh, that looks cool. But I guess I don't think it was a very big printing or something. And it's, you know, sort of a Double Dragon-ish type of game. It's just, you know, side scroll and beat 'em up. It's, you know, two players. The concept is the president has been kidnapped and you're the only two people that can rescue him, I guess.
Obviously.
Yeah, Secret Service really, really dropped the ball on this one. And you're just fighting like hundreds and hundreds of ninjas. Just an endless stream of them. It's fun. It's actually kind of a good, like, Aladdin's Castle free play, you know, with a friend game. The thing that I noticed that I thought was most dated about the game were the outfits. So, like, they're dressed like a bad guy, like a tough guy from a specific era in time. Whereas if you saw that outfit today, you would say it's a dad at Walmart.
Yeah.
You know, and then I watched a speed run of it also just because I was curious. And that is just spamming the spinning kick button, like that spinning helicopter kick they do.
Yeah.
That's all they do. The whole speed run is just spam that thing the entire time.
How long does it take to speed run this one?
It was like around 10 minutes.
Nice.
I should have written the time down. It was fairly short. The levels progress at kind of a fixed time, you know, so you can't really make the game go any faster.
Mm-hmm.
But you can finish bosses off and stuff pretty quickly.
And so you played the Wii one. Do you think that was the arcade version?
It is. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Yeah, this is a collection of all arcade games by or licensed to Data East. Hold on. So this has like Joe and Mac and Burger Time, Sly Spy. Oh, let's look at the front here. Actually, the game's listed. Steel Hoop, Lock and Chase, Burnin' Rubber, Heavy Barrel, which is a good one. Peter Pepper's Ice Cream Factory.
Okay.
Crude Buster.
Huh.
Also Side Pocket.
That is a strange collection.
Yeah.
So I played this on MAME, and I was going to play it on the NES. I know it has a port for that. It's ported to everything, but I just did not get a chance. And yeah, it's a fine game. It did feel a bit dated to me, especially after, you know, Final Fight and stuff like that. But yeah, it was fine. You know, I definitely wouldn't say spend a lot of money on this game, but I would definitely say, you know, pick it up and give it a go. I don't know if I like it better or worse than Double Dragon, which would probably what it'd be compared to the most, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Double Dragon, you can kind of move around freely, and here you're really on rails.
Yeah, you kind of, I don't really get it. Like in the first level, is that a fence you could jump on that you walk the whole time? Or what is that?
Yeah, it's like a fence, yeah.
That is so strange. But yeah, so this is ported to Amiga, Amstrad, the CPC, Apple II, ST, 64, DOS, NES. It's on the Switch. I guess I didn't realize that. The Spectrum. And something called the Zeebo. The Zeebo. Have you heard of that one?
I thought that was the name of the pants the guys were wearing.
Yeah. Well, actually, if you click on the link of the Zeebo, whatever it's called, it's the exact same color as their pants. It's that silver. Oh, nice. But yeah, that's an edutainment system from 2008. That's funny.
Spelled Zebu.
Oh, Zeebo.
Oh, that's why I wasn't finding it. It was sold in Brazil and Mexico. That's probably why.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. But so, yeah. Any closing thoughts on this one?
No, not really. I mean, it's fun for, you know, a few minutes.
What are you going to pick next?
That's a good question. Let's go with Spy Hunter.
Nice. You can't go wrong with that. I'm going to do Donkey Kong 3.
Oh, dear God. Yes, okay.
If any of our listeners play any of these games, or really any retro games at all, have any cool projects, cool news, things we want to talk about, or if you want to write in for our 100th episode, ask us anything, please, please, please email us at email@retrogameclub.net or hit us up on Facebook, facebook.retrogameclub.net or on Twitter at @RGCPodcast, which Zach runs all the social stuff for us.
Yes. I didn't get this email from Jason. Talks about playing Bad Dudes at an arcade in White Lake, North Carolina, which is, he describes as like the North Carolina equivalent of Wisconsin Dells.
Okay.
They went there over a Labor Day weekend in the late 80s. So definitely a summer arcade pick there. He said he really liked it. It was more forgiving than Double Dragon. Or perhaps the machine there was set on a higher difficulty. The Double Dragon machine was on a higher difficulty. He got it on the NES later, but unlike the NES port of Double Dragon, he did not like Bad Dudes. Double Dragon was great on doing its own thing as an NES game, where Bad Dudes seemed to try to replicate the arcade experience. And I completely agree with this. The NES version of Double Dragon is much better than the NES version of Bad Dudes for exactly that reason.
Yeah, never a great idea to try to bring the arcade experience at home, because it's really not a great experience if you're just sitting there. It just wants more and more quarters, which means just frustrating you at your house. Thank you for that email, Jason. We got some social media, too. The question was, what are your summer gaming goals?
See, playing through Rockman 1 and 6. 1 through 6.
Oh, man, that's a tall order. That is not easy. But I have actually been watching a speedrunner, Cool Kid, in Sweden. He does Rockman. He actually just got fourth place in the world for, what was it? Oh, Rockman 6, and now he's doing 5.
Okay.
And what else do we have here? Someone writes in about Bad Dudes. You know, to be fair to home ports, it wasn't a great arcade experience either. So it's kind of sluggish, and the glitch and detection isn't great.
Getting back to summer plans, got someone biking around Montreal looking for retro games, but finding that the store managers are now savvy to the eBay reseller culture. So perhaps they're putting the games up on eBay before resellers come in.
Oh, that's not
and,
cool.
And Tecmo Bowl versus RBI Baseball mentions that they got a tournament coming up. Looks like it's July 24th.
Oh, cool.
I assume you can see that on Twitch. I don't know. How does that work?
They probably have a link on Twitter. Yeah, to go to Twitch.
Yeah, I'd imagine that if they're not on Twitch yet, it would. I guess it would both surprise me and not surprise me.
Yeah. Well, cool. Yeah, please. Again, our Game Club games are Spy Hunter and Donkey Kong 3.
All right. So again, email at retrogameclub.net.
Yeah, thank you.